Around the world, epidemiologists and virologists have become the face of this COVID-19 pandemic. The scientists have really been at the forefront as they've led communities and societies around the world in an understanding and behavioural change in this pandemic. But for some, the high profile has made them a target of public anger. Two new surveys released today, one Australian and one international, report that more than 20% of scientists who responded were threatened, reported being threatened with physical and sexual violence, as well as death threats in some cases, after speaking to the media about COVID-19. Lyndall Byford is director of the Australian Science Media Centre, which conducted the Australian survey. And Professor Margaret Hellard is deputy director of the Burnet Institute. She has first-hand experience of this kind of abuse. Lyndall, Margaret, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
Lyndall, in your survey, how many scientists were polled and what kind of abuse did they report?
Yeah, we received responses from 50 Australian scientists altogether, and the results were pretty shocking to us. We had certainly heard stories from individual scientists that they were receiving abuse and online trolling, but we were surprised that around 12% of those scientists had received death threats, and the same number, about 12%, had received threats of physical or sexual violence. And when we looked at who was getting that overall, you know, some people received both. So it was about one in five overall had received these death threats or threats of physical or sexual violence. But they weren't the only threats. So there were lots of people who'd been trolled online, who had threats to their credibility, who had experienced emotional and psychological distress as a result of it. So, and these are scientists that mostly are doing this because they believe in the public good. Mm. They're not being paid to do it. They're just doing it because they want to help all of us understand COVID a bit better.
And they certainly have performed that duty extremely well through all of this, in my view. Was the abuse largely online? Was this a social media response? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about this lately.
It definitely was online. So the major sort of online space where lots of scientists said they regularly kind of receive this type of abuse was Twitter. And I think anyone that's on Twitter knows it's a little bit of a Wild West kind of place. You can suddenly get these big pylons happening from all corners of the world. But it certainly also wasn't limited to social media. And we had lots of scientists who said they'd had things, you know, sent to their house in the post. They'd had direct emails and lots of sort of spurious complaints being made to universities and their employers.
Yeah, that seemed to be a common element from some that there was a sort of a pile on professionally, either through the media and through their employer that, you know, built the pressure up on them. Margaret, I'll come to you on this in a moment, but just before I leave you, Lyndall, for a second, you approached the Nature Journal, prestigious journal, offering them the survey, urging them to get an international perspective. They did that. How did that compare with the results in Australia?
Look, it was very similar, and I should say we're not talking about huge numbers in either survey. So the international survey was 300 scientists, so yeah. We have to be a little bit careful. You know, the scientist in me says, you know, these are not statistically
sure.
significant.
But we're only talking COVID scientists, aren't we? Are we only talking COVID scientists?
We are, yes. Yeah. It was only COVID scientists and only those that had been quoted in the media at some point. So they found a really similar but slightly higher level. About 15% had received death threats and 22% threats of physical or sexual violence. And some had actually had physical attacks. I think that was about 3%. So, similarly worrying data from the international survey. And we really didn't find any major differences between the Australian and the international data. So this is certainly a global problem.
All right, Margaret, let's talk about you. You're at the coalface. You and your colleagues at the Burnet Institute done important work, important modelling, important media work throughout this pandemic, including speaking to us here on RM Breakfast. What's been your personal experience?
Thanks, Fran, and thanks for following up this issue. So for me personally, there's been sort of two components to it. So number one, yeah, I have received emails and comments which, you know, threatening. I've been threatened physically and, you know, had death threats. And also my family in one of those emails has been threatened as well. But also the other kind of component of it, which sort of Lyndall referred to, is as well, there seems to be an acceptance. And it's surprised me a little bit that you can have even other professionals comment on your work in a sort of a really disparaging way where you can quite see from the comment that they've not actually read the work. So you've got this combination of people making sort of quite startling threats. And I know that I've had it far less than other colleagues that I've talked to about, you know, sort of to you or your family threatening. But as well, there just seems to be a general acceptance of what I would classify as a discourse or an unprofessional discourse about your work where you might expect better.
Okay, I'll come back to the unprofessional discourse as you describe it, but you just sort of glossed across physical threats, death threats, and threats to your family. I mean, this is very serious. Did you take them seriously? Did you discount them? Did you report them?
Look, if anybody, people that would know me personally would know I have an attitude of it takes a lot to worry me.
I don't even know you and I can tell that.
And I've worked in an area where people with really complex health issues, and I would always, they're always so respectful and delightful, and then you sort of like working in COVID where it's on a certain level less complex and people's lives are less complex. You go, well, that's a bit surprising. I'm getting my threats now. I was not personally like, oh, fussed, but it struck me when I spoke to my younger female colleagues. So I actually made a report to the police, which initially I wasn't planning to do, but because I had a number of younger female colleagues that I spoke to at the time, and I wouldn't say laughed it off, but I thought, like, what the heck? And they actually said, no, they found it really, really threatening. They found it that it made them not want to speak in social media. It made them not want to speak to the threat, to the press, so that if they, when they go online, somebody like me, I'm senior, I'm a bit more experienced, but they felt very insecure about it. And I thought, on those grounds, I just thought, right, I'm making a report to the police, and the police, I'll give them their due, absolutely took it seriously.
The scientists have really led a lot of us to along in this pandemic, I think, in understanding, in trusting the policy that's followed, and governments have followed the health advice. It's been a very high-profile time for scientists. Do you think that is what the personal abuse is about, trying to silence them, or it's just that people are riled up and riled up about what mostly, Margaret? And I'll ask you this too, Lyndall, about suggesting we need to get vaccinated or anything in particular?
I think it's reasonable that people are engaged in the public debate. In fact, I think it's a really good thing. I do think, though, that there's this issue where it's, particularly on social media, there has been an acceptance that one can be abusive without consequence. And I actually think we need to do something about that. And I sort of think of it, because it's not the first time this has happened and it's been going on. I think it's a bit like, I equate it to sort of things of domestic violence and the like, where we've previously just dismissed it as not important, can't do anything about it. Mm. And I actually think that's a false narrative. I think we can. And I think it actually needs to stop. And I think we actually need to say, we need to lift our standards, and that it's actually not acceptable to threaten people on social media and think it means nothing. It means something to those people, and something should be done about it.
And in terms of that sort of unprofessional discourse that you described before, and I noticed that Raina McIntyre, in some of her responses too, has been sort of most distressed, I think, saddest, I think, is the word she used, by being trolled by other health professional doctors, academics. How much of this is going on, and is it only going on within the context of social media? Do you think somehow people put aside their sort of relationships, their professional sort of relationships and ethics when they're on social media? It feels different. What's going on here?
It's hard. It's hard for me to know what somebody else is thinking or feeling, or why they think on social media they can make a really disparaging comment about your work, a dismissive comment about your work, which they've never rung you to ask you about. Mm. They've never, you can tell from the comment they've not possibly read all the way through the work, that they would never have done to you face to face. You simply wouldn't talk to somebody like that. But I think that's in social media generally, that things are said on social media that we would never talk to each other
for
like
sure.
That.
Have you ever taken any of your colleagues up on it?
Fran, I'm busy, and my view on these things are that if you don't have the time to call me and contact me, I'll have a view about your professional behaviour now that I may have thought differently about you in the past. And so that's been my view of it. I don't believe in having an argument with people who, for reasons that they're choosing to at a particular moment, not be open to a conversation.
Okay.
I'm more than happy for people to contact me and ask me, explain your work, Marg. What did you find? Why did you say that? But if you're not going to take the time, and they know how to find me, And I actually send them my work, often many of these people that make disparaging comments on social media about our work, and they never contact me. Okay. So I just look at it and think they're not wanting to.
Lyndall, just finally with you, was most of the trolling that was reported in response to this survey, was it mostly in response to vaccination?
That was certainly quite high on the list of subjects, but the other one that really generated a lot of this kind of abuse was scientists who had talked about the origins of the virus, so whether it was of a natural origin or whether it had come from a lab in Wuhan. And those scientists were among the sort of most trolled, and they were also the ones that really expressed a lot of reticence about getting back into the media. So they had spoken to a journalist, there'd been this pylon, and they were very, very reluctant to do it again. And that's a huge loss for all of us when scientists stop talking to journalists and stop talking to us about what's going on in the pandemic. Then we really all suffer.
And just very briefly and finally, I'm not used to, you know, it's a small survey sample, so perhaps you can't answer this, but is there a gender element to this?
Interestingly, we didn't find there was. So I think we expected women to get more of the lion's share of trolling, and we didn't see that. It was fairly evenly split. But what we did see is that more of the, I guess, theme of the comments that were received by women were about their gender. So, you know, both sexes were trolled at a sort of equal level, but when women were trolled, their gender was often brought into that abuse.
Yeah, well, it's a terrible thing. It's not okay. I think we should all be thanking the scientists who've been stepping up, not just in developing the treatments and the vaccines and helping us through this, but also helping us understand it and trust the policy responses. So thank you, Margaret, for that work. And thank you, Lyndall, for bringing this survey.
Thank you.
Lyndall Byford is the Director of News and Partnerships with the Australian Science Media Centre, and Professor Margaret Hellard is Deputy Director of the Burnet Institute.